With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, it's Dan from the Pop Culture Hootenanny Podcast, and I just want to give you a little intro breakdown of what our show is. We're kind of a movie review podcast. We talk about random nonsense that comes up from the backstories, behind-the-scenes stories, and whatever else we want to talk about during our episodes. Here's a few clips to check us out.
Why do we cheer on, and this is a question for what we can discuss right now. Why do we cheer on sociopaths in movies where we know that they're doing wrong in almost every single way?
Because we like the hijinks that ensue.
Because we like the hijinks that ensues, right?
Art and Tony. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're the best written characters. Right? You know what I mean? Like, she's trying to make amends and saying the kids would love to have you over, and I would love to have you over. And then as soon as he gets that okay, he just starts digging into the fact that she changed her name, right? And I'm not saying that it's right or wrong. This is the 80s. Changing your name in the 80s is kind of a big fucking statement.
We have so many jaded tropes in our head. You know what I'm saying? Like, there are certain movies that will try to make something serious for a younger generation. It might be their version of, let's say, Arnold calling out the Predator.
1, 2, 3, 4, pop culture, hootenanny, pop culture, hootenanny, pop culture, hootenanny, pop culture, hootenanny.
Warning, please be aware, the views on this podcast are limited to the individual or individuals that are speaking and only pertain to them as it relates to the topic. They are limited to time, date,
voter registration district, favorite kind of chocolate bar, top hats or ball caps, and whether Saturn, Mercury, and Uranus are in alignment with the sun on the fifth day of the seventh month in the year of the eagle while you're riding your motorbike backwards up a hill.
Thank you for your understanding. Goodbye.
What is up, weirdos? You're listening to the Manic Pixie Weirdo. I'm Abigail, your host, and this is the podcast where we talk about all the different kinds of relationships that we have in our lives. And this week we are joined by a very special guest, Melissa. Go ahead and say hi.
Hi. Thank you for welcoming us onto the show.
Yeah, I'm really excited to talk to you about this. So why don't you go ahead and tell everybody where they can find you, all of the different places, your Twitter handles, all the stuff.
Ooh. So There's a little bit of a lot to describe, but I guess the ones that are related to our discussion today would be related to my podcast, because that's mostly about where we're leading with interrelationships, which would be due to having dissociative identity disorder, which would be known as multiple personality disorder until 1994. But then, so I guess I'm Melissa, but like I say on my podcast, not all of me are Melissa. I have alternate identities. I'm just one of them. And if I ever switch, well, that's going to be a little bit obvious, but that's probably not going to happen. Because some systems are overt, some systems are covert. We're more overt, which means that it shows. But basically, I have a podcast called The Bag System, Dissociative Identity Disorder. You can find us at thebagsystem.com. Our Twitter handles, I say our because, like, it's more than me. So Twitter handles, Facebook, Instagram are all The Bag System, YouTube as well. So, and we have, or I have, because it's mostly mine, my main channel is I Drank the Seawater. Which is where I talk about Tourette syndrome a little bit, which is the noise you just heard.
Yay! Okay, I'm super excited to talk to you about this. So this week, guys, we're talking about our relationship with, like, our inner relationships with ourselves and how that affects the world around us. And you have a very unique perspective on this, and I'm so excited and interested to get your take on this. So I guess let's just, like, dive right into it. So do you think, first of all, that it even, if, like, the way that we treat ourselves, do you think that affects the way that we treat, like, the world around us?
It depends on if we're considering someone with a system, which is what we call a system of identities, would be, it depends on the system. But for me, and I guess for a lot of us, would be that the way that others treated us impacted the way we treat others. So it also impacts, and that, like, so when thinking about the way that we were treated, then it very much taught us compassion and, like, thinking about how, like, putting ourselves in other people's shoes. It led to, I don't know, like, just thinking in general about how other people would be impacted by the way that we treat them, the way that we were treated, and that we never wanted to do that to anyone else. And I think that it's an overfocus probably in worrying about hurting other people. But at the same time, when I found out that we were a we, because I didn't used to know, then it changed the way that I treated myself, because I realized that when, all the times that I was saying, it doesn't matter, it's just me, it doesn't matter, it's just me, it doesn't matter, because it's just me, who cares, like, if I treat myself like crap. But then I realized it's not just me, so it completely changed the way that I impact, like, I was impacted by the way that I treated myself, or parts of me, because I kept them in consideration, which I think that mostly the way that I was treating others impacted the way I was treating myself. So it's kind of the other way around.
That's really interesting. I tend to be very internal. I tend to internalize things a lot. And I think that affects the way that I treat other people, and really just anything as well, animals, plants, like anything at all. I think it can, because I tend to internalize everything, and I tend to, like, beat myself up a lot and get really down on myself. And then that sort of, like, comes out as, like, frustration or, like, kind of like a child with a temper tantrum sometimes. I could see how somebody would look at me and be like, you're having a temper tantrum because of something really small. And it's just because, like, I have internalized everything so much, and it can, like, project out for me. I completely could see how the opposite would be true too, though. It makes a lot of sense. And I listened to several of your episodes on your podcast, The Bag System. Go check that out, everybody. And you talked about, I think it was the most recent episode that you talked about this, but like Split, and, like, the portrayal that you guys have in the media, and how that it incredibly, like, negatively impacts the way that you are treated, that all of you are treated. And that, I don't know, is something that I would know how to handle. How do y'all deal with this? How is this? Is this something that you guys have to face on a daily basis, or is it more something that you can kind of just be like, well, that's over there?
Not so much daily basis, because most people in our surroundings don't know that we have DID, so, or dissociative identity disorder, or DID for short. We'll go with that from now on. So most people, like, say, if I talk with the neighbors, they don't know usually. So, and then if I walk down the street, they don't know. The only way they would know is if I really brought it up, or they recognize me from YouTube or something, which is rare. So, because, I mean, it's a massive city. So, yeah, I mean, it's not something that I commonly have to face. It's mostly online. And I think that for, especially when the movie Split did come out, I didn't know that we were a system. But those that did and that were in the public eye definitely got bashed. They were the ones that were out about their diagnosis were kind of abandoned by their families and friends, that they said that they didn't want to have anything to do with them anymore, that they were afraid of them, that they were monsters because they saw Split and they're like, wow, you know, you're going to like chew us up and spit us out or something. And they didn't really think that. But I mean, at the same time, they were like, wow, we saw this movie and you have this. So one of you, or, you know, you might not, but one of your headmates will turn on us. And so, and those that were in the public eye got a lot of hate, massive amounts of hate. So I'm fortunate that that years in the background at this point, and there's a little bit more understanding and inclusiveness, but it's not easy, because when we did come out, when I said it on my main channel, I Drank Seawater, it was, wow, some of the backlash was not easy. It wasn't easy. So there was some, you're a psychopath, things like that. So, or that I was lying, that I didn't know what I had, and it was just like, it's fake, or, you know. So not everyone necessarily concludes that, hey, you know, this is true, even though there's massive amounts of, you know, professionalism behind the diagnosis. So, yeah. But yeah, it definitely impacts me, and but not as much as it would have probably if I had come out before or around the time of Split.
That's fair. So when you start to like get into a place, sorry, I'm from the South, so it's y'all. I don't mean to, like, it sounds weird. But that I say y'all, I've noticed these weird things about myself, sorry. But like, so when y'all have sort of these like experiences that could be perceived as negative, how do you filter through that? And like, because there was probably, at least for me, like when I get negative feedback, I go into like instant protection mode. And for me, that's like, I deflect with humor. I don't really clam up. I just kind of deflect with humor and then sort of like push people off to the side. That's like a personal choice that I do when I'm trying to protect myself. Is it the same? Like, does it work the same for you guys? And like, I think that's a positive thing though. Like, are you able to, how are you able to find that positivity in that protection?
That's a good question. So we do like, at least parts of us do deflect with humor depending on the situation. I think that just kind of understanding that different people perceive things in different ways, or how they might have misunderstood something. We're pretty good with communication, which is evident in how we kind of communicate with ourselves. But at the same time, like, we can consider, okay, so if this person was lashing out, maybe they misunderstood something, maybe I miscommunicated, maybe, you know, maybe this, maybe that. So I try to put myself like on the all around of the situation, see, okay, so if they're mad, why are they mad? Maybe they're upset about something else, and we're just reflecting here. So we try to be understanding of like all angles of a scenario, and it kind of allows to get past it and work it out.
Yeah, I love that. It's very, very empathetic. It's incredibly like, and it's a very empathetic process, and I really enjoy that. So could you talk a little bit about like your experience with being able to protect yourself and how you've been able to make that a positive thing in your life?
So I guess, I mean, it depends, because we don't always protect ourselves, or at least I didn't used to. And I think that parts of us are more capable of protecting ourselves. So, I mean, at some point, like, I was mostly trashing myself. And then when I found out what was going on and, like, all these unexplained symptoms or quirks that I call them, what they were, it was more like, okay, so now I'm getting it. Now I understand how it is that, like, maybe part of me is, like, kind of like self-talk that I thought it was, but it was sort of like I would hear someone talking to me, but I thought it was just kind of like my own self-talk. I didn't know how to explain it. But, like, if something was going on and I needed to get help or I was a danger to myself, I would hear someone, a voice talking to me and talking me down, kind of protecting ourselves from self-harm or other kind of damaging behaviors. And it was like, you know, if you do this, this is going to happen. If you don't do this, this is what's going to happen. And, that, you know, it's kind of like just a real protective mode. And it was really, wow, you know, it was moving, actually. I didn't know how to interpret that. And the more time goes on, the more that I tend to hear talking like that, because it's considered like dissociative barriers falling or something like that. But I mean, we tend to protect other people more than we protect ourselves, which is probably, I mean, I don't necessarily see that as a bad thing. I think that protecting others is kind of protecting ourselves. So.
Yeah. That's so interesting. Because I am, and this is probably says a lot more about me than anything, but I'm a pretty selfish person when it comes to protection. And so I have a very, like, small circle of people, but I'm, like, at the center of it, who I'm, like, willing to protect. That's not to say that I won't, like, jump into a situation if I feel like something is wrong or something like that. But as far as, like hardcore protection, I have a very small circle. And I think that's probably just a reflection of me. Whereas you're kind of the opposite of that, which is so fascinating to me, because you're so, like, you're like, I'm going to protect everybody else. Not to say that, like, you're throwing yourself under the bus, but you're just like, I'm going to protect myself. I'll protect myself to a point, but after that, like, I'm really more concerned with everybody else, which is really admirable. That's super admirable. And I really, like, enjoy that about you. Could you talk a little bit about, like, what that's like I just don't know another way to ask it. Like, do you guys prefer to do it that way? Like, to protect other people rather than yourself? Or is it more of like, we're protected, we're good, so, like, let's go protect other people?
That's a good question. I'm not sure exactly what it is that drives it. It's a lot of seeing, I'm not sure really. It's seeing suffering in others that we don't want to have impact them at all, because, like, in truth, I mean, we do have a lot of self-preservation, but at the same time, we're able to set it aside and consider what applies to others. That's an interesting question, because honestly, I've never really thought about it in terms of what drives it.
Yeah, I get it's just because it's different from me. And so I love it when it's different than me, because I just want to understand it. Like, what's that like? Tell me about it. Sorry. I don't mean to be, like, intrusive. So what are some of, like, the best things throughout this journey? Like, after you, well, I guess let me back up. Do you mind if I ask you, like, what your, to share, like, what your experience was when you found out? Were you like, oh, that makes sense? Or were you like, no, that's not right? Do you mind if I ask that?
It was way more like freaking out pretty badly, because I was afraid of it. I thought that it was, like, well, frightening, for one, because the idea of having others in my mind was terrifying. But at the same time, I had a lot of self-hate that I thought was, like, well, I kind of saw it as someone else other than me that I was hating that was in me, but I thought they were not in me, that they were in the mirror, and that if they were a headmate or an altar, that would mean that they were in my head. And I hated them so much that I couldn't stand to think that they were actually part of my head and not just like someone that I saw in the mirror. So I was completely freaked out. And honestly, I was so frightened and so panicked that I kind of forgot that it happened, that I was told that, that this was going on. Like, we were told by our psychiatrist. And yeah, no, we forgot for a few days even. I think I remember still thinking we were manic. And I was like, I'm the weirdest manic ever. And I'm just like, you know what? It has to be mania. It has to be, because I'm acting so like wild and out of this world. It has to be. So then by the time he told us, you know, it's not mania, you're dissociating. And then we figure out, and he makes it a lot more clear that it's alters. And yeah, no, I forgot. We ended up having a series of switches where we were like, well, okay, so a few child alters and a lot of hysterics, and like I don't remember most of it, but then completely blanking out for 2 days and then remembering and finding notes about like, what is mania, like dissociation, and like, what is it? Because I completely forgot that he had said you have alters, and I was like, what's mania like dissociation? Because that's all I remembered him saying.
Oh, wow. Wow, that's a lot. That's like a big, like, life-changing, like, diagnosis when you get it. So, yeah, I'd probably freak out too. I'd probably freak out a little bit too. I feel like that's probably pretty normal.
Well, with DID, it's not entirely unusual to have amnesia barriers, where you might forget events, because that's kind of how it works when you're younger and you develop the disorder, you develop amnesia barriers and you don't necessarily remember all your traumas. So when you get really freaked out, even when you're later in life, seeing as you develop that mechanism, it kind of tends to make it so that even when it's not necessarily like a life trauma, it's still frightening. You might retreat and forget for a little while. So yeah, it's kind of like a mechanism that you keep for the rest of your life.
So how did you get to a place where like y'all are now, where y'all seem very, maybe comfortable isn't the right word, but y'all seem a lot more like positive and like open? How did you go from like that place of fear? Because I really, that was something that I wanted to talk about as well. I'll ask that in a minute, but like, how did you go from like that place of fear to this like more positive, like place that y'all are in now, where you're like, no, this is me, and this is who I'm gonna be, and this is who I am, and there needs to be more voice with this. Like, how did you get to that place?
It was really difficult, because it started off with a lot of fear, continuing fear, and a lot of hate. Like, I hate them, they're awful, get out of my head, they're like parasites. And at some point there was this switch where then I came back to myself afterwards, and I was trying to ground myself, and if I open my eyes and I look anywhere, I'm gonna lose control again. And then so I was trying to calm down and managed to contact a friend with my eyes closed on my phone. And she's grounding us, and she's asking things like, so what is your urge to hurt yourself from like, what is it, from a degree of 1 to 10? And then I tell her, and then she says, well, what's your, I don't remember what she called them, but the other alter that was present at that time, what was their urge to hurt themselves from 1 to 10? So I don't care about them. They're awful. Who cares? And she said, well, you have to consider it, because they are also impacting your safety. And I wasn't, and then it was like, boom. And then I remembered thinking, wow, you know, they don't just impact our safety, they are impacted and they feel, and I could remember them feeling rejected. I could remember them feeling fear. I could remember their feelings. And I thought, well, they feel too. They're not just parasites. They're not just these awful things. They actually are aspects of us that are unique and also feel like I do, and they're not less valuable or gross. They actually have feelings, and I could connect with feelings, so I connected with them.
That's really powerful. That's really powerful, because that's how I connect with people too, is based on emotion. I get that feeling. I understand what that feeling is. And so you talked about in one of the episodes, I'm so sorry, I don't remember which one, on your podcast, about how anger is just an expression of fear. And it's like the root of that anger is actually fear. Now, I am a firm believer in that. I 100% agree with you with that. And you're like maybe the third or fourth person that I've ever met that like thinks about it like that. So I was wondering, like, how did you get to that place where you decided, I guess, that a reaction out of anger is a reaction from fear? And like what I do is I ask myself, what am I afraid of in this moment when I start to get really angry? Is it a similar process for y'all, or is like how did you get to that place, and then what is that, how do you manifest that like in real life?
I think it's mostly observation, like of others and of ourselves. Like say we see, even like if we consider something like a bit rudimentary, like a dog fight or something, like say one of the pooches, we'll call them Fido, is like being threatened by another dog, and he gets his back up and he starts growling. That's because he's defensive and he needs to protect himself, or he needs to protect whoever pooch he's with. So it's like he gets his back up and he starts growling, but definitely because otherwise the other guy's not going to back off. So it's kind of like a self-defense mechanism. And so like oftentimes if I think, okay, so if I'm angry, maybe it's because I was thinking of something that got me really freaked out. Maybe I had like a traumatic memory and I'm like, okay, now I'm getting really furious or something like that. Then I realize, oh, it's because I was really freaked out about something, and it's easier to feel anger than it is to feel fear. So I think it's just kind of like a better alternative to fear, really.
Because it feels better, right? It feels better to be angry and to like puff yourself up and be like, no, I'm big, mean, and scary, rather than to have to sit with that feeling of like, no, I'm scared out of my mind right now. This is really scary. I definitely have to walk through and ask myself those questions. Like, what am I afraid of? Why would I be afraid of this? What do I feel threatened by? What's going on here? So I thought I had to like tell you that, because you said that in your podcast episode, and I was like, yes, yes, I know I'm not alone. So, okay. How does your relationship with your, do you prefer headmates or alters?
Headmates.
Headmates, okay. Okay. So how do you and your headmates, like, navigate this insane world that we live in, like, because we live in a pretty crazy world, like, how do you navigate that in such a positive way? Like, you're so positive and I love it. It's so amazing. It like makes me want to be like a better person. So like how are you able, how are all of you and your headmates able to navigate this?
That's difficult, because honestly, it is a difficult world, and there's a lot of triggers or spontaneous events or just even internal conflict where you can be like, whoa, now I'm really overwhelmed. But then what's really cool about being a system of headmates is that when one of you can't handle the crap of the world, someone else can. Or maybe they can a little bit better than you can. So say I'm freaking out and I'm really overwhelmed and I'm dissociated and I'm floating, trying to get to therapy. And then someone's like, we're going the wrong way. Then I'm like, what? And then I'm kind of floating back to myself and I'm like, whoa, we're in the wrong direction. So then, or like maybe someone might come out and take over and get on the train for us, or you know, the subway, metro, and get us home or get us to therapy or something like that. That's kind of like teamwork. And when I'm not able to, then usually there's like a someone that's morally stable, say what would be considered like an emotional protector, who comes out when something is really rough emotionally, and that they're really positive and outgoing, and they come out and they're like, wow, you know, I can do this, and this is awesome, the world is beautiful. And I'm like, whoa, this is trippy. But then it's so different from what I feel, because I'm a lot more negative than most of us, or than several of us at least. So it's kind of really moving to feel that kind of positivity. And I think it impacts a lot of how I feel, because I'm like, well, that's kind of nice to feel that way. And yeah, so we definitely get from point A to point B with teamwork, and more so now than we used to, because when we didn't really know that we were a system, or I didn't know we were a system, because I think they were more aware than I was. So yeah, now that we can communicate, and I can say, hey, I really can't handle this, and can someone else do something? Or like, I might reach out and say, please, can someone do something? Please, I can't do this anymore. And then sometimes it's just like, even if we don't have like a switch and someone takes over, I may hear someone say something encouraging, and I'm like, hey, now we can do it. Now we can do it.
So does it like radiate out, that positivity? Like, does it, like, if even one of your headmates has like a super positive outlook, or like a super positive experience with whatever's going on right now, like in the world around you, does it radiate out and sort of become like infectious, where like you all kind of get, or is it different? Like, am I just way off?
Ugh. Well, technically, I mean, I suppose, because whoever's at the front, if they're feeling very positively and others are aware of that, like not necessarily like with an amnesia barrier towards it, and that they can connect with it, then they can feel that positivity in our body. So say someone, if ever you're like, I think most people can relate to being like really, really happy at some point in their life. So sometimes it can be like, wow, this is practically like you're laughing until you're crying, or like it feels euphoric. This is really amazing. This is the best moment ever. And then say you can practically feel it in your body. So, or in your head, or like there's some kind of like a feeling to it. So when someone like that is at the front or the surface, as we might say, then everyone kind of feels it, because they're kind of at the front. So their feelings are being worn by the body. Then we can all feel it. So it is infectious in that respect. And I think that in a way, it's also infectious to others, because if someone like that is at the front, then they're smiling ear to ear. So it's quite obvious usually when they're out, because their smile is very different than mine. It's quite euphoric or hyper, a little bit hyper, a little bit hyperactive, depending on who. So it's different than me. So it's usually very obvious when they're out. But like, yeah, so it can be like, hey, hi. So usually people will notice if someone like that is out.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. That's so fun though. Like I do kind of enjoy that aspect of your personality, of all of them really, that it can be super infectious. Like I can feel that energy. It's really powerful. You talk about how like the world around you sort of affects the way that like you treat yourself. But it also kind of sounds like you had to learn that like you mattered too, and that all pieces of you mattered too. I think that's something that, if that's true, that we all have to learn. How did you, if that's true, and you can tell me I'm completely wrong and that I have no idea what I'm talking about, because chances are I don't know what I'm talking about. But like, how are you able to like, be kind to yourself so that it can then, like, radiate out? How are y'all able to do that? Do you talk, like really sweetly to yourself? Do you, like, shower yourself in gifts? Like, what do you, how do you do that? How did you learn to be kind to yourself?
Because I can, so with dissociation, sometimes we can, it's sort of like the concept of a hallucination, an auditory hallucination, whereas someone with psychosis might hear a voice outside their head, like it's in the room with them, but with DID, we hear it inside our head. So it's kind of like the concept of, like, the thought is inside the head, but it's a unique voice that you hear. And sometimes I'll hear a child, sometimes I hear a woman, a man, and it sounds like it's coming from within my head, so within my, between the ears kind of thing. But I might hear them say something like, you know, this really hurts, or like, I'm scared, I'm really worried, are we really safe now? And I can hear concerns. So it's a lot of like, wow, you know, you face right with it, with the compassion of like hearing someone's unique voice, being vulnerable and saying, hey, I'm really scared. Or like, we're in the weirdest position right now. I'm uncomfortable. We can't breathe because like my face is smushed against the pillow and like, I can't breathe. I'm like, okay, I was fine. But like, if you guys can't breathe, I'll move my position right now. But like, it's just like, you hear them and you're like, wow. It, I can hear their voice, and it sort of reaches out to your heart a little bit. So it teaches like to think about yourself more than you would ordinarily. Because I'm like, but it can cause a bit of resentment. Because I'm like, well, you know, I was sort of fine the way I was, but apparently you're not. So like, we gotta move. But like at the same time, it's like, well, you know, like I'm not gonna get everyone to be like super uncomfortable and like, hey, I can't breathe, 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 breathe. And I'm like, I didn't even think about the fact that I'm not breathing. And they're like, breathe. And I'm like, okay. And I was like, okay, sure. But then, yeah, it's unique. You know, you connect with them because you can feel them. You can hear them, their unique voices, and sometimes you can feel their feelings. So it's so easy to, when you feel it like that, like, how do you not feel compassion for those parts of you when you can? It's like if you were to hear someone say in the room outside of yourself, and you hear a child say something like, wow, I'm really scared. I'm really scared. And then what are you going to do? You're going to be like, oh, who cares? No, you're not going to be like, oh, who cares? You know, you're going to be like, wow, kid, you know, what can I do for you? I'm glad you told me that you're scared. What can we do for you? So like at the same time, if something like that in your head, you're like, oh my God, what can we do? How can I help you? Like, why are you scared? What's going on? And then you kind of talk to you do sort of talk to yourself, but at the same time, it's like you're not necessarily directly talking to your own thought. You're talking to the thought of whoever you're crisscrossing with. So, yeah, it's I think that's something that I wish for others, that they could feel, you know, that kind of compassion towards themselves, because, like, if they saw themselves like someone else and they talked to themselves like someone else. Or considered, because sometimes like if we have like a traumatic memory or like trauma in general, we tend to be more down on ourselves than most people. And we tend to be more criticizing of ourselves, or more like, oh, I'm an awful person, I'm with crap because I was treated like crap. But then say if you have headmates, or you consider yourself to, like, as if you did, okay, so I would never treat someone else like crap for being treated like crap. Like if you were abused, you're like, well, I'm the awful person, but you would never say that to someone else who was abused. But then if you consider yourself to have like a part of you that's like not you, then you're like, wow, I can never blame that person. Like, I can never blame myself. Yeah. So it teaches you like to think of yourself. So if I think of what I would wish for someone else to feel or to think, is to have a little bit of self-compassion, because that's kind of what DAD can teach you in a way.
Yeah, it seems like it's kind of a double-edged sword, where, like, you get this sort of, like, you can learn how to develop, like, this overwhelming sort of sense of compassion and kindness and empathy for yourself, which is something that I think a lot of people struggle with just in general. Like, I feel like we as a species kind of struggle with that in general. But on the flip side to that is like, yeah, but also you have to deal with that sort of the flip side of that coin where, I mean, I can only imagine like it could get really loud sometimes. I could see how it would get really loud sometimes. And that would be very overwhelming for me. And I don't know. I am like prone to anxiety attacks, and I think it would just push me into a place where I would just have like a really bad panic attack. I don't know if that's true, but I could see how that could happen. So to me, it just seems like a double-edged sword. You learn on the one hand how to have this like amazing sense of empathy and compassion for yourself, and then that like radiate out to other people. It also could, I could see it getting incredibly overwhelming though.
It can. I think that it's kind of like, say you're trapped in a room or an elevator or like a space with someone forever. And you're like, okay, so these are the people that I'm with forever. You can never leave that room. You can never leave that elevator. You're just going to have supplies. You're going to have, you know, but you're going to be in there together. You can turn around. You cannot see them, but you'll hear them. Or maybe once in a while they're quiet, but you're looking at the wall, but they're still there. So you're like, you'll never have your own self. You'll never be completely yourself or you're alone. Because regardless of it, you know, you can close your eyes when you look at the wall, but you're still staring at the wall and they're still in the room. And it's like, okay, so what if there's animosity one towards another, depending on the situation? Because obviously there's friction in any kind of relationship, whether things are going well sometimes or not so well. Other times it's pretty well three-dimensional in terms of, say, emotional human reaction towards each other the way you would in an elevator or, you know, a room where you're stuck with them for the rest of your life. But it's not like it's like this trauma of like, oh no, not them forever. You can be like, okay, so what, how do we make this a better situation? So we're in this room and no matter where I go, you're there because there's no door to escape this room. So it's like the uncrackable escape room. And in a way, it teaches you to think, okay, so the solution isn't to leave. So the solution is to stay better, stay in a better way kind of thing. So how do we make this situation better? Because there's no way out until the room doesn't exist anymore. So say, okay, this is going wrong. How do we fix it? You're upset about this. How do I fix it? Because it's creating an animosity for everyone in the room. Or like, I'm freaking out. So how do we make this better? Or like, the room is everything outside of the room is shaking or like going crazy. How do we work together and make it better? It's kind of like it teaches you relationships way more than you would ordinarily because you're constantly in one.
Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah. I bet your relationship skills are on point. Oh my goodness. Sorry, I feel like I'm just sort of like digging into you. Tell me if I need to like back up or if you need me to like just stand down or something. But so you talked about how like the world sort of affects the way that you perceive yourself and then sort of how like you have learned like kindness and then that radiates out. What's something else that like the world around you has taught about yourself that is either true, but you're not really sure if you like that about yourself, or if it's not true, but you kind of understand what they're talking about and you do like that about yourself? Like, does that make sense?
Okay. So what does the world think? What do I feel that the world thinks about me that is a good thing or a bad thing? And yeah. Is it true or not?
Yeah. Like, and do you, how do you feel about it?
Okay. So I guess, maybe kind of read how people have, you know, people don't really think about everyone else as much as we think they might. We're all thinking about ourselves. More than anything else. So, I mean, I'm guessing that even if someone's going to be critical about me or judging me for anything. They're not thinking about it for all that long because they got other stuff to do after. So I guess I'm not 100% overly worried about it in one way or another. But is as to what they're thinking, I mean, it depends on who and in reflection of what. Sometimes I feel like they think I'm better than, like, that I'm a nicer person than I really am. Because I guess maybe because I'm super critical of myself. And, like, I will pound on myself for, like, the smallest thing. Like, oh, my God, you thought about this person. Like, they were, like, or you thought about how you didn't want to talk to this person because you were really upset or you didn't reply to your message right away. You're an awful person, I'm telling myself. So I'm like, wow, you know, like, I don't know. I think of myself as a worse person than I am. So when someone says, you're so nice, it's ridiculous, I'm like, well, I feel guilty because I think, well, they're misled. So some people think that I'm incredibly nice. Other people think I'm, well, probably, I would imagine I'm being on YouTube talking about mental health. Some people think I'm an attention seeker. So some people are like, wow, you're talking about, you know, all these things. Why would you do that? Why would you talk about your life on YouTube? And I was like, well, people write memoirs. How is that any less or more respectable? Like, you're writing a memoir and then, oh, that's cool, let's go read it. At the same time, you see someone on YouTube talking about their mental health, you're like, wow, you attention whore. And I'm like, well, okay, so seriously, you read the memoir and you came here and you were like bashing me. So, or like they might think, well, I have too many mental health conditions, whereas really it was because I was so misdiagnosed before. It was like borderline personality disorder, which we didn't really have. It was DID, which we had like two traits, but whatever. We had so many misdiagnoses, and they were really just all PTSD or complex post-traumatic stress or dissociation-related disorders. So it really wasn't this whole big mesh. So people thought, hey, this person has so many diagnoses, they just have like hypochondria, and they're judging, and I'm thinking, well, that's hurtful. And it's like saying I'm not really living what I'm living. And at the same time, well, I don't know, like, they can think what they want to think. But overall, I get a lot of positive feedback. So I try to focus more on that.
Oh, good. Good. Yeah, I had a very similar experience. I was misdiagnosed for a very long time. I had so many. I got, like, this long list of things that they said was wrong with me. And it wasn't until maybe like a year or two ago that I found a psychiatrist that was like, okay, time out. Like, there's no way that you have all of these things. Like, we need, like, this is, and we ended up, and now the list is much shorter. It's depression, anxiety, borderline, and bipolar. So that's much, much shorter. But yeah, I had a very similar experience with that. As well, with a bunch of the misdiagnoses and the attention seeking, I've had that too. It's so funny how people assume that if that's what you're talking about, or you're talking about it from a very personal perspective, that people assume that you're like attention seeking, or you're just, you know, trying to get sympathy or something like that. And it's like, no, I just kind of want to let other people know that they're not alone either. I don't know if that's what it is for you, but that I just had a very similar experience that resonated really big with me.
And that's a common thing too, with especially with either with having borderline personality or with people suspecting that you have it or concluding that you have it. It's like this whole, like, it's not even one of the traits of BPD, but they're like, hey, this person seems like they're attention seeking. They must have BPD. Hey, this person has BPD. They must be an attention seeker. Or like they it's not one of the traits, you weird person. It's like there's 9 traits, that's not one of them. What are you even talking about?
Right.
You get dismissed so easily when they think that you have something that you don't, or that you have all these conditions, and they're like, well, obviously this person is lying. And then you feel like, wow, that's hurtful. That's really hurtful, because I don't go out there and lie to people. I pride on truth, really. So I don't know. It's hurtful to be dismissed. And I think that probably the most controversial diagnosis in mental health would be DID, because there's so many professionals that, well, I wouldn't say most, but there are a percentage of professionals who do not believe in it, or who believe that it is less common than it really is. So it's, you get dismissed a lot, or you get to run into walls and not find out where you, what, how to get help, because they won't help someone that they don't think has a legitimate disorder. And they're like, no, you don't have this. You're either manic, or you have schizophrenia, or you have BPD, or you, you know, they figure, okay, so this doesn't exist, so it must be one of these things, even though it doesn't really fit, and you're not getting the help that you need. So you run into walls and you're dismissed, and it's really, really hard to face that kind of, it's a bit of a discrimination, really.
Yeah, it is. I would like to say, though, that just because, like, people can say whatever they want about either one of us, it doesn't make it true, though. So we just have to decide if at that point, see, like, for me, like, at that point, like, people can say whatever they want about me. It doesn't really matter. It doesn't make it true. I have to decide if I agree with what they're saying. And if I agree with what they're saying, then I have a choice. I can decide if I like it or I don't like it, and then I can decide if I want to change it or if it's something that I, you know, don't want to change. But I think that's true for a lot of people. I don't think that's just me. There's no way. There's 8 billion people on the planet. There's no way it's just me. okay. What? I'm just going to ask you. What's your favorite thing about yourself?
Ooh. So about ourself in general, or about being a system, or both, or kind of, we can wing it and choose whichever one we want.
Do both, or do whichever one you want. Doesn't matter. Yeah. Whatever you're comfortable with.
So, okay. So what I like about us, I suppose, how much we consider others, and also determination, not giving up. Like, we are willpower to boot. And I think that was our, I'm trying to think of the word in English, point of strength. In kindergarten, we're like, that was, she's grabbing the scissors, she's not giving up, she's not gonna, she won't stop. Other kids are like, giving up, this one's not, it's amazing. And we kept that, you know, perseverance. It doesn't give up. It doesn't, you know, we keep that. So I think I like that we don't give up, and that we see things through to the end, and that we find something important, we're like, this is what we're going to keep doing. This is what's important. It's valuable. Hang on to it. Keep going, keep going, keep going. It's just a moment in time. If you have trouble breathing, or if you, you know, your stomach hurts because you're knots and you're like, you've been running for too long, it's a moment in time. It'll pass and it'll be worth it. You just keep going because it'll be worth it. So I appreciate that a lot. And in terms of what I like about all of us, being a system, I suppose, as much as it's difficult in not being ever alone in a way, I mean, sometimes you can tell yourself that you are, and you can, like, nah, it can't be real. Just, I don't want it to be, so it can't be. But then, I mean, it's kind of a nice feeling to feel something outside yourself, but that's in yourself in a weird way. So, like, if you're feeling, like, really upset or angry or, like, hurt, or maybe just neutral, and someone else is, like, kind of peeking through your eyes, and they're like, wow. And you're like, what are you even talking about? Wow. And you're like, and then you start feeling the wow, and you're like, wow, this is nice. It's kind of like, I don't know, you get to share feelings, and you're like, wow, this kind of fixed the down moment. This fixed the anger, this fixed the upset, this fixed the neutral, this fixed whatever the negative or whatever passive feeling. And it was like, whoa. So it's kind of nice. And then it impacts how I kind of see others, because if they're feeling really positively about everyone and everything, then it's kind of a new outlook in a way.
I love that. Yeah. No, you do. You radiate positive energy, and it's super infectious and contagious. Okay. Last question, I promise. I'm so sorry. I don't mean to keep you super long. What do you hope? What have you inspired in yourself, like, throughout this whole crazy journey we call life, just in general? What have you been able to inspire in yourself? And what do you hope to inspire in others?
So I think I touched on this earlier, but it would be self-compassion. Like, just to kind of recognize, like, all this kind of self-hate that we were carrying for so long, or that I was carrying, and I kind of got to let go of it because I kind of considered myself like someone else. So I kind of think about that in the sense of someone else, in problem solving within how they might see themselves or be self-critical, to kind of resolve it the way someone with a system might, in the sense of, like, say, self-communication or reacting to oneself. Like, you wouldn't necessarily hear someone else talking in their own unique voice, like a child or a woman or a man, in your head. But you could be like, hey, I feel this way, and I'm really upset about it, and I'm upset about myself. And you can write that down, say, or think it, and then you're okay. So then you read it back, and you're like, say this with someone else. How would I respond to this person saying this? I hate myself. I'm awful. I had a terrible day. I'm really discouraged. So how do you reply to someone who's feeling that way? Well, try to put yourself outside of your kind of mentality at the time. And then you're like, okay, so I might kind of try to console them. I might say, hey, you're not so awful. Think about what really happened. Were you really the catalyst to whatever terrible thing happened? Were you, like, maybe things are going to be okay, and you try to console them, and then you can write that down, say, like a journal style thing. And then, okay, so that's cool. Like, wow. Like, you can kind of think about how someone else would react to you, and you're like, well, maybe it's, you know, you can put yourself outside yourself a little bit and consider how someone else might think about what you think. And then it's kind of like a bomb, like not like a bomb, like exploding, but like a bomb, like a soothing bomb.
Yeah. Oh, I like that. It's very colorful, and it's full of, like, happiness, and I really, really like that. Okay, well, tell everybody once again where they can find you. Thank you so much for coming on and talking to me. This is so good. I hope you had fun. I have had a great time talking to you. Thank you so much for coming on. Just tell everybody where they can find you again, all the places, and then, yeah. Thank you.
I really enjoyed the thoughtful, reflective questions and the interest in what it's like and the openness of it. Like, it was really quite, I'm fond of it. So I really enjoyed this conversation. Like, honestly, it was a good, like, fond, like, nothing like, wow, what's the worst thing about this? Or what's the biggest struggle? It was like, what's kind of a soothing thing about it? Like, it was a nice perspective to go on, and I really like that. So where people can find us, we're at thebagsystem.com. We're on YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, at The Bag System. And my main channel about mental health and Tourette syndrome is I Drank the Seawater. One word, no spaces. And yeah, I guess that's about it. Yeah.
Okay. Yay. Thank you so much. I'm so glad that you had such a good time, too. Thank you so much for coming on. That's it for today, guys. As always, be kind and stay weird. Bye, guys.
Hey, I'm Karen.
And I'm Aubrey.
And this is Chicklit, a literature comedy podcast where we enjoy getting lit and talking about books that spoke to us as young adults.
Yeah, Book It was dope as fuck.
Yeah, I did
used to get
it.
The little personal pan pizza.
Yes! Oh my god.
Just for you. Yeah, nobody can take that shit, dog.
But we also cover movies with special guests, and it can get pretty crazy.
I'll make a controversial statement. I will take this over Space Jam.
Is that controversial?
People love Space Jam.
We might have to stage a fight.
So if you enjoy YA fiction, that fool of a fairy, Lucinda, did not intend to lay a curse on me. She meant to bestow a gift.
Boozy beverages.
Little shot of Baileys in your coffee. Coffee, pizza, and Baileys. Goes together like...
Doesn't go together.
Like, it doesn't go together at all. And the power of friendship. I'll be like, I bought your Christmas present. And she'll be like, what'd you get me? I have to know.
Tell me right
and
now.
And I'm like,
Henry
no.
Henry gets so irritated because I'm like, do you want your present now? And he's like, it's like October. No, I don't.
Then we're the podcast for you.
We've been best friends for over a decade, so join in on the fun and grab a drink, y'all. January 6th at 1:15 p.m., the day that Dry January died.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.